Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome to Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben on a Tuesday morning here in Greenville, South Carolina. So glad you joined us this morning to listen to the program. We hope we're going to help you think a little bit deeper today, a little bit better. We're especially concerned that Christians think better than they currently do and not be subjected to the global mindset which seems to have befallen our faith so much in terms of the people who profess to be Christians. We also are encouraged that many people who are not Christians are listening to the show just because they love liberty and they want to hear a perspective that promotes freedom and the vision of the Founding Fathers rather than the vision that is so commonly promoted today in public schools and in the media, one of tyranny, one of suppression, and one of loss of rights, one of socialism, one of a Darwinian man, of the man who is part of a chance process that might as well fulfill hedonistic desires and needs in this world. Rather than fulfill the law of Christ, the laws of humility and serving one another, all the things that we value highly as Christians. So at any rate, we're here on Christian Worldview today looking for a kind of cold day today. It's 32 degrees right now. They're actually calling for snow flurries. We'll get an update on what the high temperature is going to be here shortly, folks. Well, we have a number of things that we'll be discussing today. One is the event yesterday, the debate at the Americans for Constitutional Government regarding putting parents in charge. This is the Put Parents in Charge Act. It's actually called the South Carolina Put Parents in Charge Act, in committee right now, going through various revisions of that bill in Columbia, South Carolina. It's being sponsored, folks, and this is why it's important to everyone throughout the entire United States, being sponsored by a national group and not just one money source either, a national push to get all sorts of states behind this program. It's sponsored by what I'm considered to be compromising and pragmatic Republicans who are trying to push through this bill and push it on everyone else. They show up here with some money, and all of a sudden Mark Sanford, the governor of South Carolina, who was against the bill, suddenly becomes in favor of it. And all of a sudden homeschoolers and Christian schoolers are encouraged en masse to show up in Columbia and elsewhere and start promoting this PPIC bill. Well, the PPIC bill is nothing more than a backdoor route for the liberals and the socialists to get a foothold into homeschooling, which they know is their greatest enemy. They realize where their power lies, and it's through the gradualism that can be protected and fomented, that is developed by the public school or the government indoctrination center. And this particular bill, since they have not been able to beat us in the courts, this particular bill is a way for them to get their the camel's nose under the tent, and then he'll soon be in the whole tent, in the tent in entirety, before long. What the bill proposes to do essentially is three things. First of all, it says it's going to restore parental control to education, which is false. We do not have to have any restoration of parental control. We have control. We already can choose homeschooling or Christian schooling, private schooling for children. The second thing it purports to do is improve the output, quality, and productivity of the public school by supposedly making it fight for students. Now, this is a very strange concept because yesterday, Representative Lewis Vaughn from the South Carolina legislature, one of the most conservative, fiscal conservatives in the South Carolina State House, said, no, this bill will not in any way affect the budget of the public school. The government school will still get just as much money, regardless of whether or not the students go there or not, which I thought was odd. And if that indeed is the case, then there's even less competitive pressure going to be put on the public school by this bill. The idea behind their competitive wile is well, if parents are able to get $200 or $500 a year, or maybe $1,000 or $3,000 a year in tax credits, or maybe there'll be some scholarship money come in for the very poor in society, because of this bill. There is a provision in the bill that allows for scholarship funding in a better sense or a greater sense. Well, then more people are going to go to private school options. They're going to abandon the public school and pull their kids out. Well, and of course, by doing so, the public school is going to say, "Wow, some people are leaving the shop here. We got to improve our services. We haven't been able to compete in the past, and therefore we're gonna have to compete now." Well, it's a nice story, except that it's simply not going to be the case. The public school will not have this incentive. In fact, the opposite will occur if they still get to keep all the money. The real goal here is the money, not having necessarily a bunch of bodies in there of semi-disgruntled students or with parents who are semi-disgruntled. What we're going to see happen is the public school will become even more complacent, richer, and still spending even more money per student, per capita, as the number of students leave. If there's a number of students who leave, making the equation for the average spending per student go down. Well, that indeed may be what happens. Even if, however, they start to worry about this issue, it doesn't mean that competitive forces are actually going to work any good in the public school system. In other words, even if we would look at the public school and say, "Hey, you know, these guys are worried now that they're losing students, losing credibility in society. They're going to start working harder in order to improve their product." It just doesn't work that way, folks. These public school people are not interested. They're not interested in promoting an agenda where people learn how to do reading, writing, and arithmetic. The primary goals of the public education system in America are not goals of mastering basic skills. There are other super goals, super societal goals, or super social goals, including alternative lifestyles, promoting a Darwinian idea, secular humanism. They're there to promote deviant activities in terms of, as far as a Christian is concerned. They're there to promote things like socialism, which are opposed to the vision of the Founding Fathers, and they've been fabulously successful in doing that. They're there to create little statists, people who are obedient to the government, who are compliant citizens, who cause no trouble. This is the vision, it always has been the vision of the public school. The government school program is not a program to simply effectively educate masses with basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic. So the point is, folks, it's a pipe dream to think that government schools who have this vision and this founding and this cause driven from the NEA, driven from the Department of Education in Washington, and even the departments of education in South Carolina or other states, are going to change and somehow become good institutions that want to go out of their way to just teach basic skills. It's just not going to happen. Anyway, the third objective of PPIC is to provide a social welfare transfer of great proportions from those who don't work, those who do work, to those who do not. And that is to help the so-called disadvantaged or those in poverty. I think some of the bill versions say low to middle income families will be helped. Other versions say those in poverty will be helped. Well, as we know, Christ tells us that the poor you have with you always, and that is an axiomatic statement, because no matter how wealthy a country is, even if all of us made $500,000 per year salary, if somebody just makes $400,000 a year, he would be relatively poor to everyone else. So that poverty is always a slippery term the term poverty is always slippery when it's used in a public policy context. And here we have an example, you see, of somebody saying, "Well, we're going to help out those who are in poverty." Well, what does that mean? Well, it's obviously going to be defined by some regulator at some point who has to put a cutoff line. Well, we'll use the national statistic laid down by, you know, the Department of Health and Human Services, or whatever it's called nowadays. We'll just go ahead and use that as our cue, and make that it. Or somebody say, "No, we believe in South Carolina, you know, 15,000 years poverty, or 30,000, or 45,000. Well, any rate, the point is they use these slippery terms, and it's always problematic in public policy. But the other side of it is, the real problem with this third objective of PPIC is it promotes socialism. It promotes a welfare state. It promotes the transfer from some people who work to other people who do not, with the best of intentions. And folks, there's no question it's a well-intentioned bill by many of these people, that good intentions do not justify the theft and extortion that goes on from folks who simply want to do good with other people's money. It's not the role of the state, and it's not the role of Christians to support any kind of wealth transfer that requires robbing one person in order to benefit another person. It's just simply wrong. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Indeed, we're providing that roughage this morning, trying to keep you good and healthy, at least healthy intellectually and as a thinking Christian. We don't want to just follow along the train of the lemurs or the mice or the rats or whoever the Pied Piper might be leading nowadays. It's so sad to me when I see so many well-meaning, good Christians, especially here in South Carolina where I have an opportunity to meet them personally. All I know, it's everywhere. It's an epidemic everywhere that if the Republican Party starts piping away, people just fall in line as if the Republican Party somehow represents what God has intended for this nation. It's simply not the case. Folks, look, George W. Bush, regardless of all his lip service and all his words, has not been the champion of the religious right. He's not been the champion of those who would promote Christian values or the champion of those like me who simply want to have liberty in this nation and want to be free to practice my faith as I want to, as I desire on my own. I don't want the state particularly enforcing anything with respect to moral issues, because I don't believe it's the proper vehicle to do that. I know some of you don't agree with that. Some believe it's actually the promoter of those of good things and the restrainer of evil and so forth. That's another topic. In fact, we might get into that topic today a little later. At any rate, it seems to me that Christians follow blindly along whatever the Republican Party is doing, as if somehow the Republican Party is a representation or a manifestation of God's will in the land. And if we don't do what the Republican Party or support the Republican Party, don't do what it says and don't support it, then we're somehow violating what God has for us. This is simply not the case, folks. George W. Bush has done virtually nothing to stop abortion, and I don't care about his lip service or his failed attempt at stopping partial birth abortion. The man has not done his job and has not fulfilled his calling. The man has defied rights, one right after another. In fact, there's a couple of things we'll read a little bit later regarding that. And he, through the Patriot Act, he continues to try to erode our liberties. He conducts unjust wars in foreign nations that almost have no purpose other than self-serving interests, fulfilling self-serving interests here in the United States. And the list goes on and on, folks. This is not your man. And if you've been gullible in following him, and now you're getting the new W sticker and sticking it on your bumper sticker, I think, and I honestly believe, folks, even though you're well-intentioned, you're making a big mistake. This is not our man. He's duped you into believing that he is the Christian's choice. It's just like you were first duped into believing it was important to vote pragmatically. Better to vote for George W. Bush than have John Kerry in there. This is just simply not the case, folks. We need to be careful and realize what we're dealing with. George Bush has created a huge amount of government. We still have the same amount of moral problems in this country. He's not done anything that of any substance other than lip service to stop the erosion of our values or Christian or liberty values in this nation. Well, at any rate, I say that all because this PPIC is so typical of what we see with the Christians just following right after whatever the Pied Piper is piping that day. And the money comes into the state, and people start chanting the tune. Hey, we need to go ahead and get behind the PPIC bill, Put Parents in Charge Act. You know, that sounds good. Sounds like we want put parents in charge, but they already are in charge. This is something Christians don't think about. And I've had some emails of people coming and supporting the PPIC saying, John, we need to support this. We need to put parents in charge. My response is just what I gave you earlier. Look at the objectives of the bill. Have you read the bill? And they respond, no, I don't have time to read the bill. Andrew honestly writes in and said he had a comment yesterday supporting the bill, and he just said today, John, I'm open-minded, after I wrote back to him and he heard me on the show, I'm open-minded and can be swayed, but I don't have time to do my own research, especially when they change the details of these bills on a weekly basis. Like I stated, if all of what you say is true, then PPIC does not do what I would want it to do and is not acceptable. And I appreciate that, Andrew. That's an honest comment, and it's an accurate comment, because if what I'm saying is true, no person who loves liberty, no person who's a true conservative or who is a pro-life or other libertarian should accept this bill. It should not be acceptable to us who cherish these kinds of values. And Andrew, simply for reasons of work and not having time to always follow every piece of legislation, was just going and making a judgment initially on what he'd heard from others. Well, it must be good because so-and-so likes it. And that's not necessarily a bad thing to do. I mean, if you hear the Tyranny Response Unit tell you that something's good to support, I think that's reasonable that you say, look, I trust Dr. Coben or John on this issue, and I'm going to go ahead and just follow along with what he's doing, because whatever, I know that he stands for principles like I like, and therefore we'll go ahead and follow along with it. That's a fair thing to do. There's nothing wrong with that. But when the people they're following get misinformation or misled, then everybody, like a domino effect, falls down and ends up following the wrong policy. And I think that's what happened with Andrew's case, and this, and maybe with the case of many others, is they didn't read the PPIC bill. They have not had time to keep up with it. And who does? Understandably, that's not a criticism of not being able to keep up with it. But by not really knowing what's in the bill, they simply believed people's analysis of the bill to be correct, and that it actually helped the cause of liberty and so forth, and they were going to support it. The fact is, folks, they've been deceived, that the PPIC is a bad bill. And as I told South Carolina Representative Lewis Vaughn yesterday, the problem is not the tax credit here. It's not that people at this conservative libertarian kind of debate, we were all there against. It's not that any of us were against tax credits. We all want to have a reduction in taxation. Clearly, taxation is extortion. Everybody's in favor of that. But that carrot is not worth the stick. The problem is it's a bad bill. It's written such that the public school is going to be improved, which we do not want to do because it's our arch enemy in society today. And the second thing it's going to do is foster socialism. And the third thing it's going to do is open the door for more regulation of homeschooling or private schooling. It's the first step. It's the camel's nose under the tent, where soon afterwards we're all going to be suffering because this initial act allowed government to have some regulatory authority over homeschooling or over private schooling. That's what we're opposed to, and that's why it's not the tax credit issue. It's not the competitiveness issue, as we talked about before, is a ruse. It simply is not going to occur. It's a pipe dream to think that schools will become more competitive because of PPIC. So the bottom line is it's a poorly written bill. It's a bad bill. It has to be completely transformed, and I gave Representative Vaughn yesterday the article I'd written in Times Examiner with a positive alternative. In fact, if you go to policyofliberty.net and click on the articles link, you'll find there a link to all my articles and all my columns written on a weekly basis for the Times Examiner here. And we'd encourage you to go ahead and pick that up, or take a look at that. It will not be published. This particular positive article for Times Examiner will not be available and in print until March 9th, but it's posted on the webpage before that. Nevertheless, there are positive alternatives listed in there for how a bill ought to look, how homeschoolers truly could be protected, how a tax credit truly could be applied so that there are no strings attached and so that there are no meddlings going on by the state or undermining of our liberties. Of course, he's going to say, well, we could never pass that. You know, that'd be hard to get through. Well, maybe so, but then leave the homeschoolers out of it. As my wife said the other day, look, if they want to keep this bill, the way it is, fine. Just take homeschoolers out of us. Leave us free and clear of it. We don't need anything to do with it. They can deal with their socialistic and control programs as they want. That's what we would prefer. Leave homeschoolers out or change it to go with liberty. And if they don't accept liberty, we don't want the pragmatism and compromise that goes along with the Republican Party. The Republican Party is going down the drain fast because of these insidious tendencies it has towards pragmatism and a compromise. Well, anyway, here I am preaching about this morning the PPIC, the Put Parents in Charge Act. If you have a comment about it, we look forward to talking with you on the phone here. Do give us a call. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben. So happy you joined us today as we're talking about this very important issue of the Put Parents in Charge Act that occurred yesterday. There was a big debate at the sponsored by the Americans for Constitutional Government. By the way, I've been mentioning this debate. In case you weren't there, I'll tell you a little bit more about it. A couple of listeners we appreciated listening to the Tyranny Response Network yesterday showed up there and did as I had requested and said, Dr. Coben, just wanted to let you know I heard you on the air, and because I heard you on the air, I came on down to the debate today. I was so glad that I did. Well, I'm glad that you heard on the air yesterday morning and were able to attend the debate. It's difficult to get to a debate 10 o'clock in the morning on Monday for most, especially most guys after work, and a lot of the ladies, especially homeschoolers, homeschooling moms, are busy with the kids. So we don't expect a lot of people to necessarily be available on the show. From the show at those kinds of events, but we appreciate those of you who do show up. Anyway, the event occurred at Sims Library on Pelham Road, and essentially what we had was we had six panelists, three on each particular side of the issue. We had on our side, that is the side that was, in my opinion, in favor of liberty and against tyranny, Times Examiner columnist Ben Graydon, who's an excellent public speaker and did a great job yesterday talking about public education for what it really was and why we want to oppose this bill that supports public education. The second person was Juliette Kosak, who's been a longtime researcher of public policy issues, and had some great insights into the regulations and the possible consequences of supporting this act. Then you had yours truly, the Tyranny Response Unit. And on the opposing side, there were three individuals. One was Representative, South Carolina Representative Lewis Vaughn, who's purported to be one of the most conservative members of the South Carolina State House, as well as a female pastor, and I've forgotten her name all of a sudden. Excuse me, I didn't mean to forget the name, as well as I think it was Mary. Well, I'm sorry. There was another woman there was a woman named Inez, who was a teacher, or is a teacher at Southside Christian School. Several of them are fairly conservative, neoconservatives at least, these ladies, but as far as we were concerned, we're quite confused and unprepared to tackle the task of what PPIC really entailed. Anyway, that was the setup. Now, as I understand, we have a caller on the line. I just didn't, for those of you who are waiting for the weather, I'm just going to quick give it to you and tell you the low is going to drop down tonight to 25. The high should get up to 46. They are predicting some places we're going to have snow flurries today in Greenville. I'm sorry I didn't have my complete information when I gave you the weather report earlier, but that's it, folks. We have on the line with us now Chuck, and we'd like to welcome you to the show, Chuck, and thank you for calling Christian Worldview today. Welcome to the show, Chuck. Chuck, do we have you there? Well, I guess we lost Chuck. Well, when Chuck calls back, we'll certainly entertain the call. We appreciate you trying to get through to us, Chuck. Sorry that we lost you somehow on the line there. We have here, let's shift gears for just a minute. Just a moment, folks. We'll be right back after a break in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview. Boy, I'm sorry, folks. We're having a little bit of technical trouble here today. Excuse the inconvenience, please. We're working on correcting the problem right away. Also, remind you to send your cards and letters and just to be supportive of our producer, Daniel. Send them to questions@policyofliberty.net. Our producer, Daniel, had his 14th birthday on Sunday. We want to congratulate him for that. Please go ahead and send in your cards and letters to the show. Now, for some reason this morning, folks, we're having difficulty taking phone callers as well, and so we'll do our best to get Chuck back on the air when he does indeed call back. In fact, he's on the line now. Let's see if we can't get Chuck to be able to hear us. Chuck, you're on the air. Can you hear us?
Hey, morning, John.
Hey, Chuck.
Are you hearing that?
Yeah, we hear you just fine now. Did we lose you before, or was it your cell phone that cut out?
Yeah, the cell phone. I'm not sure which end, but it just cut out.
Okay.
It was very intermittent even before, but good. I'm glad we got to talk.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling.
Yeah, it sounded like y'all were talking about the PPIC Act this morning.
We sure were.
Okay. Because all I heard was on the phone. I'm afraid I'm away today and can't hear you on the radio. But I still had to get in some political talk before the week was out. So.
Yeah, well,
it was a good time.
I suppose you're just a junkie, aren't you? You're addicted to information. You got to get you got to have your fix of political talk at least once a week.
That's right.
Well, okay.
I know you're not very fond of the act, and so this will be a chance to talk with somebody who is. I think that for a lot of parents, that the that don't feel that they're in a position to homeschool, they may feel that a little less tax burden, which is what this represents, would allow them to make the difference between not being able to afford a school that teaches their values and having to go to a public school and have their children indoctrinated. And that's a sad thing, and I know it sounds absolute that you say, well, you just can't allow that, but I think people see things in degrees. And, for example, you've probably talked to people who don't feel that it is a government indoctrination center, that feel that it's okay to go to public school. And then there are degrees varying from that. People don't either see it as totally evil or totally good. A lot of people see it as maybe not the best, but tolerable.
Right. Well, I appreciate the call. I'll tell you what, we've just spent about 20 minutes talking about this issue. I know you haven't been able to hear, being out of town today, what we've been discussing. We had quite a meeting yesterday at the Americans for Constitutional Government. There were six people there, and at the end of the discussion, the leader of the Americans for Constitutional Government came to me and said, John, the other side was simply unprepared. I had no idea how bad the PPIC bill was, and in fact, almost every well, I'm not going to say every, but most of the people that were in attendance, were probably 60, 70, maybe 80 people there, came up and congratulated me as well as the other with other folks, Ben Graydon and Juliet Kozak, for what we had said, because they were persuaded that the PPIC, after hearing that, was absolutely the bad thing to do, you know, a bad bill. And including in that, leaders from the Constitution Party and others. And I'll tell you why. It's what you mentioned, it could possibly be true. If a person who is in poverty, say 35,000 people, if we can use that word poverty loosely here, if they make 35,000 a year, their South Carolina income tax might be $400, for instance. That's the maximum credit they're going to get. And probably are not going to be pulled out of poverty or being much incentivated, I'll create a Latin word there, not be incentivated too much to send their kids to private education. That $400 might help them. Well, the Representative Vaughn quickly retorted yesterday, oh, but we'll encourage lots of scholarships and grants for these people through the program. Well, that remains to be seen. It may well happen, but the tax credit itself is certainly not. And then that brings up another question of what if people are really principled. Why is it that just a little bit of money would encourage them to actually do what's right and do what's good? Now, that's one whole side of it. It's very dubious and questionable to think that they might actually do what's right if they had just a few hundred dollars more. But more important than all of that, because that's an empirical question that we just have to see after the act passes, is what the act actually stands for. It's opposed to free markets. It will not produce competitiveness in the public school like people are thinking it will. And it fosters socialism and gets the camel's nose under the tent for a way for these folks to regulate homeschoolers and Christian schoolers. So the evils that come along with a little potential good, as far as I'm concerned, as far as most people at ACG and that we've talked to elsewhere, see, outweigh it. There's just the evil outweighs the good in this bill. It's a bad bill. If we could get a tax credit put through, that would be fine. But you have to get rid of all these other shackles and things that are hanging off of this particular bill. So there's a long-winded answer and a summary of what we've just talked about. Are you still with me, Chuck?
Yes, I am. And actually, I was going to congratulate you on putting it through in a nice, brief, concise form. So I didn't consider it long-winded at all.
Okay.
Those are good arguments, and I'll keep thinking about it. I guess I find so much. I so strongly desire something that will move us in the right direction. This seems promising, and I'm an optimist. But I think you have a very good point that things like this are very hard to do and leave unencumbered. That they tend to get polluted, if you want, by things that are strings that get attached. And it's, before you know it, they've turned from a pro-freedom measure to an anti-freedom measure.
Yeah, and some people at the meeting yesterday brought up that this you know, when Mark Sanford switched his view of being against it to for it late last year, he did so after the big money came in from outside the state. The group supporting this just showed up in the state with a whole bunch of money and just expected all the homeschoolers and Christian schoolers to line up and support this thing. It was not a grassroots movement. And besides that, if you look at the bill, it clearly is a typical Republican kind of document that's full of compromise, that's full of the pragmatism that plagues that party. And beyond that,
one of the elements in it that I had strongly objected to was there's an income cap on it, and that's the usual sort of social engineering, where we're trying to say everybody should have exactly the same income. And it almost goes back to FDR's position that people ought to just have a certain amount. Anything over that, you should simply confiscate. He was for 100% tax rate over a certain amount of income.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And as Juliette Kosak brought up yesterday, she scoured the bill and found several places, and I had read these also, that show that the government's regulatory bodies for health, for safety, and these include things like condom use and Americans with Disabilities Act, all that stuff gets thrown in there and can be imposed on homeschoolers through this bill. So what I did, and Chuck, if you have a chance to get online and read my article that'll be in the March 9th Times Examiner that's already it's up there posted on the website, you'll see that I propose a liberty alternative. A liberty alternative of what should this tax credit look like if it really supports liberty? And I gave this yesterday to Representative Vaughn to see if he would actually do something with it. And people need to write to Vaughn and say, look, Dr. Coben gave you a liberty alternative to what this tax credit should look like that really does protect homeschoolers and people that send their kids to private and public schools. No strings, no frills, no compromising pragmatic politics. Why don't you adopt Dr. Coben's plan or put it into the bill? And his response was yesterday, well, I'll never get it through and I'll be the only person to vote for it. Well, this is a cop-out. He needs to get rid of the garbage in there or, as my wife said, just take the homeschoolers out. You know, go and do what you want with the other people. Put the homeschoolers out. Leave us out of the regulatory framework and change this bill entirely. Either take the homeschoolers out or redo the bill and put Dr. Coben's alternative in there. So I would encourage you to read that article and then also go ahead and write to Vaughn, Lewis Vaughn, Representative Vaughn, or whoever else that your congressman might be, and tell them to support the revisions to the bill that favor liberty.
Okay, I'll look at it, and I'm very pleased with a lot of what I've seen from Lewis Vaughn. So I think there is a chance that he would come around with enough people contacting him.
He might, and it is important. And we encourage all of you listening to Christian Worldview to contact Lewis Vaughn. I don't have his number here. We should have actually had that prepared. If somebody who's listening has Lewis Vaughn's phone number or email address, please do call the show or send us an email, and we'll be happy to put it on the air. Otherwise, go ahead and look up on the Internet. Do an Internet search for Lewis Vaughn from South Carolina representative. I think he's in the upstate here somewhere, maybe Spartanburg. And go ahead and get in touch with them. Tell them to support this alternative. Anyway, I appreciate the call, Chuck. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Hey, well, I will thank you one more time for putting me on to The Real Lincoln. Still enjoying that book. It's amazing how, you know, things we know even, like everyone knows, some of the stuff in there is well known, but everyone knows about Sherman's March to the Sea and burning Atlanta, et cetera. And he points out that's not normal military practice. It was not considered the gentleman's way to wage a war in that era. It was unconscionable to go and wage total war on civilians. And we all know that, and yet we kind of just shrug it off. That's amazing, isn't it? When he points it out, you go, wait a minute, yeah, he's right.
Well, and Lincoln behaved that way the entire way. Now we're opening a whole different subject, and what a great subject it is to discuss. But I'm telling you, if you look at Lincoln's activities, not only suspending the writ of habeas corpus and the so-called right to rape order in New Orleans early in the war, the man was pulling out all the stops. He was willing to do anything to preserve his power, including attacking civilians and harming people. And the brutality, the rape, the confiscation of crops, the burning down of houses, the thrusting of old people, women, and children into the street, into the cold, and saying, just go and survive, we're burning you down. That kind of atrocity only occurs under the most belligerent, nasty rulers in history, including the Hitlers and the Stalins and the Genghis Khans. I mean, Lincoln is right in there with all of those people, and folks just have not, those notorious leaders, and people just don't realize, because they've been brainwashed at the Government Indoctrination Center or elsewhere, that he's been a good guy. So it's a great book, and what Chuck is reading is Thomas DiLorenzo's The Real Lincoln. We'd encourage all of you to get a hold of that. There's also a recorded lecture that's been going on the Tyranny Response Network by Thomas DiLorenzo throughout the day, and if it's still playing, hope you have a chance to catch that.
Okay, thanks, Don. Good day.
Okay, thanks a lot for the call, Chuck. We'll talk to you later. Well, this is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. So glad you've joined us here, and we're talking about some very important the subjects. The Put Parents in Charge Act has been a great deal of concern among those who are professing liberty, professing faith in Christ, and therefore is something that is a valuable topic for us to consider here. Yesterday we had so many folks who were pastors, so many folks who were interested in the Christian faith at the Americans for Constitutional Government meeting, and I think many of them had their eyes open to how they'd been duped by this national movement, to force and thrust these ideas, these backdoor socialistic ideas on people in South Carolina. Watch out, it's coming to your state as well. It's not just for South Carolina. Anyway, you're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. What a great network for people that want to think. Listen here every day, 7:30 to 9 Eastern Time. And if you're not listening during that time, you're listening to recorded broadcasts, which is almost as good as listening to the live show. The information is still always good, and we appreciate you doing so. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back after this break.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We've been talking about George Bush and Lincoln and PPIC this morning, the Put Parents in Charge Act, supposed Put Parents in Charge Act, here in South Carolina. I noticed we've had a few things coming in from the research staff regarding Bush policy, and I thought I'd just mention some of these things to you, simply because, again, Christians seem to be so likely to follow after George Bush without realizing how he's depriving us of our rights and why he's promoting things that are anti-liberty. And here, for instance, we have U.S. District Judge Henry Floyd in Spartanburg, South Carolina, saying that government cannot hold this fellow Padilla, Jose Padilla, with a crime indefinitely as an enemy combatant, a designation President Bush gave him in 2002. The government contends Padilla was planning an attack with a dirty bomb radiological device. The court finds that the president has no power, neither express nor implied, neither constitutional nor statutory, to hold a petitioner as an enemy combatant, Floyd wrote in a 23-page opinion that was a stern rebuke to the government. Floyd, appointed by Bush in 2003, gave the administration 45 days to take action. We think this is a wonderful decision, said Padilla's attorney, Andy Patel, as Padilla waited on another line. It's just one of those moments that all Americans should be proud of. Well, that's true. I'm very proud to hear that Judge Floyd is so much in favor of liberty and even opposing the man who appointed him, George W. Bush. George W. Bush is holding this guy for two and a half years in custody without being charged. Almost sounds like something Abraham Lincoln did. Remember, in The Real Lincoln, Thomas DiLorenzo exposes the fact that the entire Maryland legislature was imprisoned for 4 years in New York because Lincoln feared they were going to vote to secede and take away some power from him. Well, I guess what would you expect a power-hungry maniac like Lincoln to do? Well, nothing other than what he did, but nevertheless, it still was a pretty nasty thing if you happen to be one of those imprisoned for 4 years. And think about this poor man being imprisoned for 2.5 years without actually committing a crime. So he's an enemy combatant, supposedly, but they don't bring up any proof for it. They're just going to hold him in prison for all this time. You can't do that. This is America. I realize that there could be a threat here, but folks, don't you understand? If this kind of activity can be carried on by the executive branch of the United States, anyone that they're suspicious of or they don't like, for whatever reason, can be thrown into prison and held there for years. One of the articles I'd written earlier was on a man named Bud Erskine Cummings, who was held by a guy named Judge Anderson down in Anderson County, South Carolina, for months. I believe it was 8 months he was held in prison, undergoing some kind of testing, maybe even more than 8 months. Now, I've just forgotten the exact number of time. But this guy was just held without being charged and on trumped-up charges for a while, and then to undergo psychiatric tests, and finally released as if there's nothing wrong with him. And the judge just goes scot-free. These judges have an incredible amount of power, too, when they do the wrong thing. Sounds like Judge Floyd is doing the right thing, while this Judge Anderson, also in the same district, is doing the wrong thing. Well, those articles are on my website, the Erskine Cummings case. If you care to go to policyofliberty.net and click on articles, you'll see it there. But at any rate, we need to really to take notice of what George Bush is doing. There's some continuing research on this here. He says, it's a genuine limitation on the president's belief that he can do what he wants on the war in terror. The administration has said Padilla, a former Chicago gang member, sought to blow up hotels and apartment buildings in the United States in addition to planning an attack with a dirty bomb radiological device. Skipping down through this news blurb, Padilla, a Brooklyn-born convert to Islam, is one of only two U.S. citizens designated as enemy combatants. Federal courts previously ordered Padilla's release unless the government was prepared to charge him with a crime. Good for you, Judge Floyd. Not that we're in favor of people who hold an Islamic religion. I'm a Christian, and I'm not ashamed of that. But as a Christian, I have no right, and as an American, I have no right to withhold somebody in jail simply because I don't agree with his religious convictions. And in fact, my call as a Christian is to preach the gospel to this guy and hope that he might be saved. And we'd be happy to do that, and we will do that. And we encourage all of you, as a matter of fact, who have not ran to Christ and have apprehended him as your Savior and Lord to do so, because ultimately there is no hope in this life without Jesus Christ. Well, at any rate, interesting story about Judge Floyd. Interesting story about the character of George Bush and his administration. Now, there's another story that came from our research staff, from Mark. This is a story from the AP wire, Mark Sherman reporting. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez said Monday he would move aggressively to prosecute obscenity cases and laid out broader agenda, much like that of his predecessor, John Ashcroft. He's going to continue his stepped-up activity in human trafficking investigations and prosecutions. And he's going to investigators will focus on prosecuting people for firearms violations, which often accompany gang activity, illegal drug organizations, and organized crime groups. So what's he against now? He's against firearms violations, which is probably just a euphemism for trying to get gun control on folks. And we know George Bush has been real slack on gun control or on gun rights. And so he's also going to step up human trafficking investigations, whatever that means. And he's also going to lay out another agenda for prosecuting obscenity cases. So all of a sudden we have another anti-liberty guy, sounds like, somebody who's supposedly doing stuff for the public interest, Gonzalez. We know this guy's been a snake from the beginning because he's been a pro-abort, and he's the attorney general. And he's been in favor when he was a judge in Texas of allowing, denying parental consent for teenagers that want to get abortions. And some people try to soft-pedal, he's not that bad a guy, it was just the way the case went. No, it's not, folks. This guy is not truly part of our team on this stuff. He's not pro-liberty. Anyway, he's also in favor, according to this news release, of renewing the provisions of the USA Patriot Act that are set to expire at the end of the year, saying the law has been an important tool in preventing terror attacks on the United States. Well, we don't know about that, but we sure know it's been an important tool of abridging the rights of American citizens. He says, amending the Constitution to give crime victims the right to participate in prosecutions and sentencings. Well, what in the world is that all about? Anyway, this guy, Gonzalez, watch out for him. Another example of the Bush administration gone awry, doing what the gullible folks on the religious right, the Christians who voted for him, doing things that they weren't expecting he would do and should have. They should have seen the snake in the grass, and frankly, should have just shot it right then and there rather than tried to coddle it before it bites them. Anyway, we've come up to a break here on Christian Worldview. You're listening to the Great Tyranny Response Network, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview. I like that little quip. We're going to get some new quips going along here and there to add to our bumper production crew lineup here. And anyway, do enjoy that one about hurling liberalism with great force. I also wanted to talk about a couple other things that are happening under the Bush administration. Our research staff here at TRNN has found that the tax industry is not growing that fast. Tax preparers seek young clients on the web. February 27th, Kansas City, Missouri, with millions of nonchalant teens and 20-somethings across the country, accountants and professional tax preparers have found prime demographic industry for growth. They're offering free and cheap services, enticing them with specially designed websites, even offering discounts on vacations and electronics. The article continues, IRS data shows about 91% of the roughly 18.4 million tax filers aged 18 to 24 earned an average refund of $939, though younger Americans are believed to far more prone to miss out on the check by not filing. Executives at Intuit Incorporated, maker of TurboTax software, recognize the trend and try to determine the best way to address the demographic through research, focus groups, and surveys. They have launched a special site, rockyourrefund.com, complete with images of fun-loving shirtless beachgoers and a grinning snowboarder that offers what marketed as fast, simple return for $5.95 because you've got better things to do. One of our researchers said, well, better things to do like protecting our rights. Isn't it sad that the young people in America have just missed the boat here? If they're it's sad because they've gone to the government indoctrination center in large part. They aren't out to protect their rights. They don't even know what their rights are. How many Americans actually read the Bill of Rights or know what they say? Talking about a small percentage, folks, and it's certainly not being read in the public schools in mass. This fellow Rosenberg says she tries to explain the basics of taxes to her young clients, something this lady Rosenberg, that the major firms are doing well as through their specially designed sites. They're trying to find out where these taxes go and how they can take advantage of them. I had kids coming up to me saying, I got this in the mail, and it would be a W-2, he said. They asked, what do I do with it? Well, that's good. It's good that people are completely ignorant in some sense of the tax law, that they're not completely sold out to it, but it's sad that they aren't going to stand up for their rights. interesting aspect about taxes and about youth. I have to think about that some more. Related to taxes, the Libertarian chairman, Lee Ott, sent out an email he wanted to be broadcast on the air today or discussed, and I have not enough information here, but I would like to encourage those of you who do to call in or email and let us know what you think about this this new movement that's going on. It's called the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement. It's apparently been under development for several years. In case you're not familiar with it, it is a plan developed by 42 states and the District of Columbia to collect sales and use taxes on internet transactions since the federal government won't do it for them. The participating states must all change their sales tax laws to conform to one uniform standard, and then other states will cooperate with them to collect sales tax revenue and data. Sounds like a bad bill to me. I don't know much more about it than what I've just read here to you. I scanned the site a little bit. It sounds like they don't like the fact that people are starting to buy things over the net or across state lines and not having to pay sales tax. This is a good thing, folks. So we don't want to have to pay taxes. And obviously, any way we can minimize the amount of loot that's extorted from us, the better. And so this would be a good thing to maintain. Sounds like this streamlined sales and use tax agreement is just a socialist statist ploy, and I may be mistaken, and call in and correct me if I'm wrong, just one of their ploys to get us back in the saddle with paying more loot out to them. Interesting. Well, at any rate, we have a couple other things we want to move on to here. Appreciate those inputs, emails, and so forth from people to talk about these latest events that affect liberty and the Christian commitment. I've been reading an article most days most of our shows from the Freeman, Ideas on Liberty, and I've wanted to encourage you all to go ahead and pick up a copy of the Freeman. The Freeman is a publication of the Foundation for Economic Education. You can go to FEE, that's fee, .org on the web and sign up for this. I think it's $10 a year for students, $39 a year if you don't have a student in your house and have to get your own copy that way. It's a great organization to support and well worth every penny you pay for this magazine. The articles and ideas that come through in the Freeman are just astounding. Excellent work. And there's an article on page 29 of the January-February issue called Thomas Garrett and the Underground Railroad by Burton Folsom. And he has an article frequently on things like this one, Our Economic Past. Some very interesting commentaries on the slave trade and the Underground Railroad. He says, on March 27, 1857, an elderly Quaker abolitionist named Thomas Garrett climbed the stairs to his office in Wilmington, Delaware, and penned the following letter to a fellow conductor on the Underground Railroad. I have been very anxious for some time past to hear what has become of Harriet Tubman. Has thee seen or heard anything of her lately? It would be a sorrowful fact if such a hero as she should be lost from the Underground Railroad. Garrett's words remind us of three things. First, the institution of slavery directly contradicted the spirit of liberty that was wafting through America in the 1800s. Second, the Underground Railroad was a key to freedom for fugitive slaves. Third, for the Underground Railroad to be successful, black and white had to work together effectively and courageously. Historians often neglect this last point, but it is critical to understanding the story of freedom in America. Blacks, of course, risked their lives when they tried to escape from their masters, but the white conductors of the Underground Railroad who housed them and then transported the slaves northward risked jail terms or large fines. According to the Fugitive Slave Act, slaves were property, economic assets. Helping runaway slaves, therefore, was theft, and the transporting of stolen goods across state lines. Slave owners were allowed to go free territory in the North, using the power of the state to recover their property and to prosecute those who trafficked and stole the goods. For the Underground Railroad to function, black and white had to share risks and work together to fulfill the goals of the Declaration of Independence. And he goes on to say, Thomas Garrett was perhaps the busiest station master in the entire Underground Railroad. From his hardware store in Wilmington, which had a secret panel, and Delaware was a slave state too, by the way, he helped over 2,300 fugitive slaves slip through the last 20 miles of slave territory into Pennsylvania. The audacious Garrett also tried to feed the often exhausted blacks and gave them each a pair of shoes before smuggling them toward the border. Well, I won't read the whole article. What's interesting for us, I think, as And this is a Hillsdale professor, I believe. Burton Folsom is the Charles Klein Professor of History and Management at Hillsdale College in Michigan. Well, I think what's most interesting to me and in thinking about the Christian worldview is this: the fact that this guy, Thomas Garrett, was a Quaker, a professing believer, and for all I know, was a believer, and no doubt a pacifist, as Quakers tend to be, and yet he was willing to violently, if necessary, well, I'm going to say violently, he was willing to egregiously violate the law of the land at that day, at that time. It was against the law, against what Caesar had to say, against the state, to help slaves escape. Well, what do we think about this as Christians? Do we have a right to do illegal things in the cause of doing, in the name of doing what's right? Doesn't it sound kind of like the abortion clinic protesting movement today? It's illegal to trespass on abortion clinic property. You shouldn't do it. Have you heard pastors say that? You think these same pastors are living in 1840 or 1850 or 1857, as this man was writing then, Thomas Garrett, would also have said to Garrett, it's wrong for him to be complicit in breaking the law. He should uphold and obey the law here and not help slaves escape. Well, is that right? Well, obviously, there are Christians on both sides of this issue. Well, the Tyranny Response Unit, that's me, Dr. John Coben, thinks that it's okay to break the law sometimes. In fact, it's right to break the law sometimes whenever evil is being done, and if slaves have been kidnapped and held against their will, and people are put into tyranny, just as if your child were kidnapped and held in tyranny, it became lawful them to be held, it would be okay still for you to break the law, to violate the government edict that's evil, and go ahead and help them to escape. You may have a different opinion. You may think, no, you can't disobey the government. Sorry, got to obey on every little thing, including this. You can't help slaves run away. If that's the case, do give us a call here. We'd like to hear from you. Or send an email 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to questions@policyofliberty.net. We'd like to see what you have to say. We've come up to our half-hour break here, and we'll be back on the Tyranny Response Network in a few minutes. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to TRN.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben. In Greenville today, we're still a little bit chilly this morning, March 1st, 2005. Should be spring-like, more spring-like than it is now, as in Greenville at least. Still in the upper 30s this morning. Going to rise up to about 46 degrees today. So 46 should be our high. They're actually predicting somehow we're going to have snow flurries this morning, although it doesn't look like there's a cloud in the sky to me, at least not here. There may be where you are in upstate South Carolina, so you can beware of those snow flurries coming down. You never know, they might weigh a lot today, just so you're pre-prepared for the cold. Well, we have a letter come in from Greg, and he said, I heard you read one of your listeners' letters a few weeks ago, Dr. Coben, and the idea that the 10th commandment was enforceable was dismissed out of hand. You all know what the 10th commandment is, of course, folks. It's against covetousness, or shall not covet your neighbor's wife, your neighbor's ox, your neighbor's donkey, and so on and so forth. At any rate, he says, the idea that we would need a coveting police to enforce it was made to seem ridiculous. However, it is interesting to me that the NASB, the New American Standard Bible, translates Mark 10:19 when quoting the 10th commandment, do not defraud. This is not without good linguistic reason. Historical understanding of this commandment also bears this out. Time doesn't permit a full exposition of this, but let's look at an example of how government can apply the 10th commandment in society. All men are responsible to God's moral law. If you failed to understand the fine print in a contract, and it was demonstrated that the one who wrote the contract was attempting to defraud you, does government have the duty to protect you from such a scoundrel or group of scoundrels? Fine print is the only way that immoral men violate is only one way that immoral men violate this commandment. At one time in our history, the term alienation of affections was considered a violation of the Ten Commandments, and it was not adultery, but the plotting of adultery by alienating the affections of one spouse from another. More can be said, but that is all for now. Well, I appreciate the email, Greg, and it is a very good topic, I suppose, here for Christian Worldview on a couple of accounts. One would be the biblical exegesis side, and the other is the liberty side. Let me just say about the biblical exegesis, I don't know. I haven't heard this argument before, but I think that it's probably not as easy to just simply say, well, this is just a repetition of the 8th commandment. It just means don't steal. It doesn't mean, don't covet. Because Paul also seems to say in the New Testament that he didn't understand that he was a sinner until the 10th commandment was expounded to him and sin revived and he died. He realized how bad he was. The same thing is can be said of the rich young ruler who approached Christ and said, look, I've kept all his commandments since I've been young. And Jesus said to him, look, and I'll tell you what, sell all that you've got and give it to the poor and then follow me. Jesus had told him, had quoted him all the 4th through the 9th commandments, or maybe it was the 1st through the 9th commandments, but left off the 10th and then applied the 10th to his heart. So it's not clear to me that this exegesis is right. Some of you who are expert theologians can certainly call in and let us know if I'm correct or if there's something I'm missing here or something needs to be added to that. On the liberty side of things, we're very concerned about having a coveting police. The idea that government would enforce the Ten Commandments should be repugnant to those who love liberty. Think about what the Ten Commandments entail. They entail making sure that we worship Jehovah, that we go to church on Sunday, or some would argue Saturday. I don't argue that, but some people would. They entail that we should force children to obey their parents, that there should be no adultery, fornication. There should be obviously no murder or theft or lying. I suppose that would mean fraud, and no coveting. So all of those things would be enforced by the state and by some people's measure. I don't think this is right to do. I don't even think it's possible to do in a free society. And they'll retort and they'll come back to me and say, well, Dr. Coben, we're talking about having massive regeneration someday to where everybody is a believer nearly in society, maybe 85 or 90% of people are, and therefore it'd be easy for all of us to uphold these things. Well, if that indeed does happen, well, that would be an interesting thing to see. But if the whole vision of government rests upon a post-millennial claim, I believe it's a pretty weak basis. Now, some people won't agree with me. They'll say, no, post-millennialism is what the Bible teaches, and we can expect that to occur. Well, I'll believe it when I see it, and I won't be ashamed or upset about it. I'll be happy if there truly is a post-millennial reign of Christ in my lifetime on the earth. Nevertheless, the whole theory of having a pluralistic society, which people like Gary North and others just detest, the idea of having a pluralistic society it requires us to not have any one code thrust upon another. The only code that we can possibly have that is good and under a pluralistic society is that everyone gets left alone, that there is no one who's going to be forced into any one particular camp on any particular issue. We do not need police forces. We don't need taxpayer-funded police running around and literally bugging bedrooms to find out if there are adulterers there. We don't need governments going to check out the hearts of people and actions to see if they're coveting things. And we certainly don't need a police force out there to stone incorrigible children or to see those who are violating the Sabbath on a particular day, not attending church, are brought to justice. This is an extreme waste of money, especially because it causes people to be forced to accept the Christian religion who might not care about the Christian religion. It's exactly antithetical, I think, to what the New Testament teaches. Now, you may have a different view about that. You may see, as Greg apparently indicated here, that a proper role of government might be to enforce the literal Ten Commandments of God in the world. Be happy to hear from you if that's the case. Believe it or not, we've come up already to another quick break here on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast. But we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Our research staff has also come up with a very interesting quotation from Rusus, or R.J. Rushdoony. I got to like this guy. Rushdoony has just nailed it on the head so many times. But being that he favors Christian Reconstructionism, and is a theonomist, he differs from me on several very crucial points. Doesn't mean I don't appreciate him or read him, because I think he has it, again, hit the nail right on the head so often. But here's one quote that came from the research staff out of the Institutes of Biblical Law, which Rushdoony wrote in 1973 on page 102. And it says simply this: the state, as the enforcing agency, is limited to dealing with evil, not controlling all men. The state, as the enforcing agency, is limited to dealing with evil, not controlling all men. So here Rushdoony would seem to be saying, well, look, you wouldn't be in favor of necessarily a covetous police that goes out to the point of controlling people, but when that covetousness is manifested, perhaps as an evil or a social evil, as I'm reading into him here, but I think that's what he's saying. Then you would go ahead and deal with it with the state. I don't agree. I think that's an interesting way to look at things, but I don't look at the state as being a minister of God to put down what God considers to be evil. On the contrary, I think Romans 13, 1 Peter chapter 2, the evil and good talked about there are not the evil and good as defined by God's understanding or law. In fact, what we have is the evil or good that are defined by what the culture or the government itself thinks. At any rate, we need to consider these things deeply as a Christian, I know, and it's part of Christian worldview to think more clearly about the scriptures and how they apply. There's a great debate that could be made between theonomists and those who hold the liberty of conscience position regarding the role and nature of the state. And it's a friendly debate. It's not that there's some animosity. There is a difference, just like there's a difference between Baptists and Presbyterians. It doesn't mean that one hates the other. It just means there are legitimate differences between the two. The American Revolution, folks, had people that held both the theonomic view and a liberty of conscience view fighting side by side against the British. Let's remember that. They are brothers, and they are those who support each other in many respects. But in this particular idea of the state as an enforcing agency is not my particular view. If you have a different view, you're welcome to call the show or write to us, and we'll discuss it further. We also have some other interesting information. Oh, I just got a note here. Someone sent a note that Mom is listening in Marietta. Well, who's Mom? Somebody. Is this could be somebody related to me. I don't know. Listening in Marietta, Georgia. Well, good, if that's indeed the case. Well, we want to also give a plug today for the Times Examiner. I've mentioned my columns on the Internet are available on the Internet, policyofliberty.net. And I wanted to make a plug real quickly here for the Times Examiner. You can pick up a copy at 44 Pine Knoll Drive, Greenville, South Carolina, 29609. The phone number there is 864-268-0576. If you call there and talk to Bob Dill or Laverl, the editor or his wife, you should be able to get a subscription set up for just a mere $20 a year. Again, the phone number is 864-268-0576, $20 a year, $22 out of state, at least for the rest of this month. And after that, I think it's going up $5. Well, we have a caller on the line, and we'd like to welcome you to the Christian Worldview. Who am I speaking with?
This is Stuart.
Hey, Stuart. Nice to have you on the show this morning.
Oh, well, good to be here. I've enjoyed it. Sorry I wasn't able to make it to the debate that you had yesterday. That sounded like it was interesting. What do you think the outcome was? What was the view of most of the people there, you think?
Well, that was told to me by the person who runs the Americans for Constitutional Government. I mentioned earlier on the show, perhaps you missed it, Stuart, but what was said afterward was, Dr. Coben, it was amazing to me how unprepared the other side was. That was the side in favor of PPIC. And if you simply look at PPIC from your perspective, and that was my perspective as well as fellow columnist Ben Graydon, and Juliet Kosak from the Constitution Party, it was very clear that this is a deceptive, a sugar-coated liberal or neocon policy where they're trying to entice people with a tax credit and pull the camel's nose under the tent so that they can get in and start regulating homeschoolers. And we confronted the folks with literally what the bill said, its objectives, and how the state was going to use this to go ahead as a backdoor and a backdoor approach and get at homeschoolers, and that we needed to oppose it. One person said in the audience, we need to either take homeschoolers completely out of the bill here so they're not affected, or we need to rewrite it with Dr. Coben's liberty proposal so that the tax credits are truly tax credits, and there is a decree written in strongly giving parents complete freedom from truancy regulation, compulsory attendance, testing requirements, mental health tests, all the other things this bill would impose on us, including the Americans with Disabilities Act, and completely free us from the shackles that these neocons are trying to do. At the end of the conference, the woman who organized it came up and said, Dr. Coben, I am just so amazed. We had no idea how clearly one side of this issue should be for us. I think the vast majority of people in this room are in complete agreement with you and the others on the panel that we need to oppose PPIC as stated. And I think at least more than half the people came up and personally shook my hand and said how much they agreed with it, including the leader for the South Carolina's Constitution Party, who had not any idea really what PPIC was all about until the debate started, and at the end was very much against the bill. So anyway, that's the outcome of it. I don't know if that satisfies your question or not.
Yeah.
But,
well, do you know whether or not it was recorded?
I don't know that. The media was supposed to be there. There was no cameraman there. I think it was Channel 4, but there might have been a reporter there. You'd actually have to call the Americans for Constitutional Government. And if you, I believe that's Miss Ann Campbell, who runs the Americans for Constitutional Government. I don't have handy a phone number, but perhaps you can look that up or call the station later, and we'll see if we can't get you a phone number.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Certainly, you know we've talked about this before. I agree that the state has no business in education, and anytime people try to go after that carrot on a stick, there's always a string tied to that carrot. So.
Yeah, and not only that, but the objective of the bill, one of the stated objectives, there are only three, was to promote the public school. It wanted to improve the quality of the public school and encourage the public school. The last thing true conservatives or libertarians want to do is to foment the development of their enemy. Our greatest social enemy right now, clearly, is the government indoctrination center, the so-called public school, or I like Bruce Short's term, the pagan seminary. Why do we want...
Well, you know, Gary North says that humanism is a religion, and the church where they teach that is the government school.
Amen. That's right. That's it's all there for us. Anyway, I appreciate the call. We've had a lot of talk about PPIC this morning, and hopefully we're getting the message out to folks that they either got to abandon this bill, take homeschoolers out of it, or just rewrite it, as I gave Louis Vaughn, the representative from, I think it's Spartanburg. He's supposedly a conservative down there. He's really a compromising, pragmatic Republican, as far as I can tell. But I'm just being frank here on my analysis of him. But indeed, if he were to incorporate some of these liberty alternatives, which I've written about, the bill might be saved. But it's going to take a radical transformation. And as they showed at the debate yesterday, there's a lot of out-of-state money pushing for this. It's a typical Republican Pied Piper sort of amendment where people from California or New York, the Republican Party generally, is trying to force people to line up and follow in lockstep and support this bill, much like they supported George W. Bush, our great leader for the faith.
Right? What was your feeling after talking to Louis Vaughn? Do you think he would be on board with introducing a different version of that bill?
Well, he might be. We are encouraging all the listeners to go ahead and write to him, because he seems like a well-meaning man, but he's very ignorant and very confused on this issue. He thinks we've got to just go with the gradual step that we've got. I'm more worried at the gradual step the left's going to take by having this bill and getting their foot in the door to regulate us. It's not worth a few $100 or even $1,000. I'd rather bribe the government and be free of their tyranny over my family and over their control of the children in the homeschool situation. And I think he probably appreciated that there was a strong opposition from the right, and realizing his neocon position was not the most solvent. But nevertheless, I'm not sure he's going to have the political will to stand up and actually go and try to change something, because he just, like you said yesterday, no one will vote for this except for me.
Well, yeah, one of the legislators were there.
The only one I know about was him. And there were several pastors in the there's probably 60 or 80 people there. There were some pastors in the congregation, or the congregation in the group, and there were just him, I think, is the only representative. People from Christian schools were supporting the bill. We had a female pastor on the other panel who was supporting the bill. Some other black activists who were supporting the bill, and not generally nice people. I don't mean to put that in a negative connotation, just that you could tell they were full of spunk and spirit about supporting these things to get them out of poverty, even though it might only entail a $400 credit for, you know, a $35,000 a year earner. Anyway, but Mark,
it's pretty sad when only one representative shows up for something that's supposed to be as important as this is purported to be.
Well, that's a good point. Well, I appreciate the call, Stuart. We've come up, we're marking a break here, so we need to go to that break. If you want to stay on after the break, that's fine. Otherwise, I just thank you for the call and hope you call back again soon.
Okay, well, keep up the good work.
All right, thanks a lot, Stuart. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're coming up against a quick break here. We'll be back in just a minute on the Tyranny Response Network.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net, that's www.policyofliberty.net on the web, You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview. We've had some clarification finally on the mom business in Marietta. It turns out that this cryptic note that I had received was regarding my mother-in-law. Thank you for listening, mother-in-law, in Marietta, Greenville County, which is in South Carolina. And apparently the reason for this note was that this fellow, Louis Vaughn, is a representative for South Carolina from Marietta, the Marietta Slater, Upper Greenville County, South Carolina area. So if you live in Travelers Rest or northern Greenville County near, near Landrum, all that area, Tigerville, this is your representative. You need to write to this fellow and say, put Dr. Coben's Liberty Alternative in the bill, A, or B, take out the homeschoolers entirely, exempt them from this whole business that's promoted by this PPIC bill. Write to him. He's a nice fellow. Although I told him that yesterday I don't trust him because I don't trust any government official, because he said, don't worry, I'm there, I'll protect you. I'm not going to allow this to happen. I don't believe it. I don't think he has bad intentions or bad motives, but I don't trust men to protect my liberties, especially not men who are elected officials in the government. No one is safe when the Congress is in session. I think that was Mark Twain had to say. So by all means, if you live in northern Greenville County, write to this fellow, Louis Vaughn. Tell him to indeed promote the Liberty Alternative that was handed to him by Dr. Coben at yesterday's meeting. I do remember he said during debate he considered himself a lint head from Marietta, and I believe now that means he's something to do with being a child of a textile worker or something like that, or mill. Being that I'm from the true South, Southern California, some of these things escape me. I haven't got used to all the local jargon yet. I didn't even know there was a Marietta, South Carolina. I'll tell you how ignorant I am. Of course, there's a lot of little towns here like Pumpkin Town and whatnot, that Dacusville and whatever else that you find out in the sticks here, 6 Mile, another one. But who knows where these places are. Just ignorant about my geography here, being a relatively recent transplant to the South, from the true South. Had another email come in from the research staff about restaurants slow to drop fat menu choices. Washington, for people trying to banish trans fat from their diet, dining out can be a big problem. Products free of trans fats are rapidly appearing in supermarket snack aisles, but the fried chicken and french fries ordered at restaurants usually are cooked in shortening or oil-containing trans fat. And restaurants need to take the customer's health to heart, people are saying. The government started telling people in January to eat as little trans fat as possible. Hydrogenated is bad. They want to increase the labeling requirement. They want restaurants to start following the, towing the line here. And so, at any rate, the government's trying to get involved with more regulation of folks on restaurants. We're opposed to that. This is anti-liberty. We're not in favor of this sort of things. We should not be in favor of these kinds of activities by the state. I wanted to say more about that, but we have a caller on the line. We want to get right to that caller as we're getting close to the end of the show, and we'll pick this topic up tomorrow or another day. And we'd like to welcome you to Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, yeah, this is Pastor Tony Romo.
Well, hello, Pastor Tony Romo. Thanks so much for listening to the show this morning.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, I wanted to call just before you went off the air because I got some good news for you.
Great.
We, as a church, on this past Sunday, we voted to support the TRN network.
Fabulous.
On a monthly basis.
Wow, well, that's great. I hope that other churches will do exactly the same. And why is it that they took that great and laudable step to support TRN?
Well, because of one of the things that we've been doing in our church for the last 3.5 years or so, is that we've been having what we called, oddly enough, the Christian Worldview Sunday School class. which is basically what you've been doing on the radio. And we discuss issues that we as Christians ought to be aware of and how we are to be participating in as far as government issues and so forth. We actually have three categories, which would be the political, the secular slash cultural, and the ecclesiastical. And so whenever these issues surface throughout the week, we take some of these articles, and magazine articles or internet articles or whatever, and we read them and we discuss them according to biblical principles, and we're having quite a good time doing this. So when we heard about this particular radio network, which is something that we're really excited about, we decided that we wanted to go ahead and support it as a ministry. So you're online now with us as far as we're concerned, and we're going to continue to support. And I, you know, what I'd like to do also, if you don't mind, is that encourage other pastors in this area to do the same thing. I mean, this is a ministry, and this is something that we have been, well, I think, kind of slack in that particular area.
Well, I appreciate so much the support. We have come up to the end of the show here, but I just want to say quickly that we really appreciate this kind of support at TRN, because all of us who work here are volunteers. But where else do you hear the truth about things and a true analysis about stuff like the Put Parents in Charge Act? We've been filled, you know, with all this, all the talk from the Republican Party and elsewhere, pushing on Christians that they need to support things that they ought not to be supporting. This is the only station that truly stands up from a liberty position, a biblical position, and integrates, I think, correctly, Christian worldview with how we should deal with public policy, especially, as well as other aspects of biblical interpretation. So, Pastor Rome, I wish we had more time to talk, but I'm going to have to cut our call short here, and I appreciate the call, and I hope that you'll call back soon on another Christian Worldview Today. This is
Dr. Will. God bless y'all, and we'll be talking to you later.
Okay, thanks so much, Pastor Rome.
Sure.
This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview. We're signing off for today, and we'll be looking forward to seeing you again tomorrow for another edition of Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.